Jhené and Gola Jr., the podcast.
I can confirm, among a number of things that happened this weekend, I have reached out with and made contact with Ariel Helwani.
Oh, you have?
We're good.
Oh, we are okay,
all
good.
We are all good. We've got no beef here between our show and Ariel Helwani. We can all proceed amicably because, man, if the UFC fight that we saw this weekend is any indication, we want zero parts of those problems. It's Jhené Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr. and Jhené Egbuamoke. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the show, Pennzoil Performance.
Wait, it's Line. Monday. What do we tell people on Mondays?
We're still here.
We're still here.
Against all odds, too, because, Jhené, I'm sitting here trying to process everything we saw this weekend. I mentioned Khabib Nurmagomedov goes off inside the octagon this weekend, wins in the second round with the chokeout. We have the witching hour from hell yesterday. So many competitive 1 o'clock games in the NFL. The World Series is going off. And then I'm getting ready to come on air right now, and I just hear in my ear Cliff on the board going, man, did Judge Judy switch her hair up? Like, I am all sorts of off guard right now.
Look,
Jhené,
we are here to celebrate any man that can notice when a woman switches her hair up.
Is that like, is the risk worth the reward in that? Because if you get it wrong, and Jhené, your hair looks lovely today, I know you sent
Thank
me
you.
The picture this weekend, because we were having this conversation off air going into the end of last week. Jhené was getting ready to take all of her braids out, and she said, when I do it and my afro's out, I put on 70s music and I dance in my apartment. And
Why
lo and behold,
me?
I got a video this weekend. I'm sitting around on set doing the college football show on digital with Trevor Scales, and I get a picture of Jhené just rocking out in her house, fro out everywhere.
This is how we roll, you guys. Jhené and Golic Jr., which, by the way, in our break last week, I took a braid out just to show you how the process is done.
And you know what? It's people helping people, right? Like, I had to learn something. I don't know a lot about girl hair. To be honest, I know even less about black girls' hair. And so I learned a lot in this moment.
You gonna learn today.
This is all a part of the process. If you thought this conversation was weird, and ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive's Home Insurance, Progressive celebrating 8 years of donating to veterans in need. Learn more at keystoprogress.com. Might I offer you Sunday Night Football? Because Jhené, weird just seems to be in the cards anytime the Seattle Seahawks find themselves into Sunday Night Football. And when they went up against the Arizona Cardinals and lost in an overtime thriller, it just seemed kind of par for the course for a franchise that is used to the bizarre happening to them.
I'm going to say this in the most affectionate way possible because I've played there. I'm part of the West Coast. Seattle is a weird city. Weird in a good way, right? And I feel like their football team, because you mentioned it, of the Seahawks' last 22 regular season games, 17 have been decided by one score. So this is a team that's used to doing things differently and still thriving in those situations. Now, the big picture that I got here was, you know, obviously the Seahawks lost, and a lot of the narrative is like Russell Wilson, you know, his interceptions, like that's not normal. But again, they've had a good season so far. You're looking on the other end with Kyler Murray. And I feel like Kyler Murray is absolutely a beast of Russell Wilson's creation. Both MLB draft picks, both smaller quarterbacks. And Wilson, he sort of created this blueprint showing Kyler Murray how to work. And the crazy thing is you're seeing that in the same division as well.
That's really the mind-blowing part. We've talked so much. Every team in this division has a winning record right now. It's every bit of the juggernaut that we expected it to be. But it is so true. One is not possible without the other. And thankfully, that stigma around quarterbacks that are under 6 foot is starting to go away because, man, imagine if we had been deprived of watching Kyler Murray go out there and put dudes in the absolute spin zone out on the perimeter. Jhené, the athletic ability that he brings, in addition, I mean, he threw for 360 yards and 3 touchdowns. We know the arm talent is there. But him and Russ both have that ability, and it so stems from baseball, to get out, get in space, and then get down. They never take big hits.
How many sports did you play growing up?
I played football, I played lacrosse, and I wrestled, and I played basketball poorly for a couple of years. That is about all I had. Outside of hoops, what were you majoring in?
I started off in soccer, but I stopped playing soccer because I was really great because I was like a foot taller than everyone else and everyone would run away when I'd run and play, but I scored a lot. And then I played volleyball and then obviously basketball. But that's where you can see sports working hand in hand, because for me, volleyball gave me a lot of like that leaping ability, that timing and all that type of stuff that helps with blocking. And it's cool to see how these two guys, these two quarterbacks are similar. And also it's like, okay, Kyler Murray is here and he's competing now. They're not waiting for their times. But Russ, to be able to still be a veteran and lead in so many different categories, like, it's impressive as well, even though it's tough because now the Seahawks have lost a bit of their momentum.
Yeah, and the Seahawks get knocked from the ranks of the unbeaten. And for it to happen behind three Russell Wilson interceptions and some pretty uncharacteristic ones, him trying to fit it in spots, not seeing guys dropping out in coverage, was remarkable. But you mentioned Russell Wilson, ever the team guy, stood up and was more than willing to take responsibility for them after the game.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we played a great game except for those three plays, I mean, honestly. And those are my fault. So, you know, there's so much that we can do, and we have so much confidence. Our confidence is not going to waver. They're a great football team, too. And it was a, you know, we knew it was going to be a battle. It always is and down here and whenever we play. So, you know, nothing really changes except for the fact that we just have to tighten up some things. I have to be better, which I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to playing the next game. I wish we could play tomorrow. And that's just, you know, our mentality, and we'll be back stronger. We'll be better. And, you know, I thought we laid it all on the line. I mean, just every play was competitive. I mean, I even thought the last play to DK, you know, where he, went down the sideline for the touchdown. I mean, I thought this game over, honestly. But they called holding, and that was their call. So I think throughout the whole game, just the effort of guys, how we played, how we competed, how we battled.
Chinay Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chinay Igwumike. And boy, oh boy, am I glad he said DK Metcalf. Because yes. If you want to talk about two sport looking dudes, that looked like a straight up track meet. Like, he was running down to hand Buda Baker the baton on the 4x1 relay. Dear God, Chinay, watching DK Metcalf, who is one of the largest, most physically impressive human beings on the planet, walk down Buda Baker. I mean, saved them what turned out to be a full 7 points, because the Cardinals went for it on fourth down in that ensuing drive. His tackle saved them 7 points, allowed them to even get into overtime. Is that the most freakishly athletic thing that we've seen so far this year?
I would have to say so, just because of his size at 6'4". And what I love is the ability in play to switch gears, because if he hesitated for 1 second, he would have, well, he probably still would have got there, but like,
he is a big, scary man. So he might have still got there, but
his focus was impeccable. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I also wanted to bring up the fact that you called that Tyler Lockett was due for a big game as well.
Ooh, big game. I don't even know if I could have predicted this version of the Tyler Lockett game. 15 receptions on 20 targets for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns. Chinay, this was every bit, I think it was a couple of years ago now, Russell Wilson had a perfect passer rating targeting Tyler Lockett. This is sort of like the telepathic connection these two have that Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown had many moons ago when things would break down. These guys are an unbelievable force. And Russell Wilson, I understand all y'all that want to throw Aaron Rodgers into the mix. That's the prettiest deep ball in football. That's the best deep ball in football, and I don't think the gap between 1 and 2 is all that close.
Okay, but another cool part of the game was obviously when Kyler Murray was, he saw that DeAndre Hopkins was in single coverage, and then we saw him smile. Like, this game gave us a couple of gems, and I'm just like, man, imagine just being that at peace out there, seeing your guy, and I'm like, oh, cute, throw it, land it.
That really is like, yeah, that's one of those moments where some guy was probably sitting next to his girl and she's like, why don't you ever look at me like that? Like, you saw you saw him come open, and the pure joy that overtook Kyler Murray in there is going to make some spouses jealous. You can bet that.
Oh, no, absolutely. It's funny because you couple that with like the imagery we got from the Cowboys, like, and the girl that was trying to console her guy. But, you know, I really wish you told me what I needed to be prepared for, because your girl in that Kyler Murray lot, 37 points to my quarterback's -0.18.
Yeah.
So you should have helped me out.
We will get to that in a little bit, because what happened with Cam Newton and what is going to happen going forward with Cam Newton is a fascinating case study. And I'll tell you one thing right now, it has nothing to do with the outfit he wore to or from the stadium.
Thank you.
That much we can be sure of. But coming up next, we talked about a wide receiver that put a smile on his quarterback's face. Coming up next, we'll talk about another wide receiver that might bring headaches into one of the best locker rooms in football. That's next. It's Chenae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chenae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
The circus is coming to town. We're trying to figure out what kind of show we can expect in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers locker room. It's Chenae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. In about 10 minutes, we'll try and figure out what to expect tomorrow as Game 6 of the World Series goes along between the Dodgers and the Rays right now. The Dodgers take a 3-2 lead. Clayton Kershaw gets all his glory. We will check in with June and see how comfortable Dodgers fans should feel in this moment. Chenae, I know I'm certain that there was more fireworks going off. I don't know a lot about L.A. That's all I know is that the minute the Dodgers or anyone around there wins, people are popping off fireworks.
Look, honestly, we are here in Los Angeles, and I think a lot of criticism was coming on Dave Roberts, but now, like, winning is the thing that cures everything. That's what I'm seeing, because people have short memories. Those people that were tweeting about him were tweeting something different after yesterday.
Who's we?
Oh, we? Oh, us.
We're in Los Angeles.
oh, I'm sorry. My fault. Like,
me, Cliff, and Devin still got to walk outside, and Shannon.
How is it out there, though?
It is in the 40s, and it is dark. We are officially about to enter the permacloud, which is a reminder, and we're going to have this conversation as we go along. If right now what gets you through it is Christmas tunes, go ahead and toss it on. There is no too early for the holiday season. Thanksgiving is a day. It's not a season. When the calendar hits November 1, my tree is going up. Sia's Christmas album is going on, period.
I will tell you, it is kind of chilly out here. It's around 73.
All right, I'm going to move away from this before I start to get upset. Chenae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. And Chenae, we spent a lot of the last segment talking about DK Metcalf doing wildly athletic and terrifying things, but just in general, the Seahawks, because they got knocked from the ranks of the unbeaten last night. The Cardinals looked like a playoff team, and that was one of the teams we talked about going into this season. But it brings up a larger conversation around who actually is the top team in the NFC, because coming off 2 weeks ago where we saw the Tampa Bay Buccaneers thrash the Green Bay Packers and go out again and add to that resume this weekend with a big-time win over the Raiders, that's looking like it could be the best team in the NFC right now, and has a lot of people asking, why are you bothering to bring in someone as big a potential headache as Antonio Brown? Are you at all surprised, especially now that we've seen them push forward and push further into what looks like the driver's seat, that they would bring this guy in?
I am not surprised, because I think we all understand that this was made for one reason: football talents and leaning into Tom Brady's window. And the way I see this is that the Bucs, when it comes to the NFC, like, they are solid. They really are solid, because you get, 45 points on the scoreboard versus the Raiders, and then another night you can shut Aaron Rodgers down, and then you land Antonio Brown. So to me, this is a push to making themselves as competitive as possible, and they're showing that they have that balance. They can win relying on their offense. Now with this resurgence of Gronk, they can win relying on their defense. And then you add AB, I just think that when you're in a scenario where this window is now, maybe this is them inserting in a little bit more risk, thinking that, hey, like, we have to lean all the way into this and hopefully manage a situation that hopefully is manageable.
And Chenae, you know what? To that extent, you're right. This is an extremely talented team who probably sees, after that Green Bay game, I have to imagine they even looked around and said, oh, wow, we're really good. Like, this defense is balling right now. I think they're second or third in defensive efficiency in the league right now. They said, all right, we've got that unit on one side. We've got, when healthy, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and as you mentioned, Gronk starting to insert himself more and more in that. We can add another piece here in an offense that, kind of like Kansas City, adding Le'Veon Bell. He didn't have to come in, Le'Veon Bell or Antonio Brown, as we saw with the Chiefs, come in, and do too much too soon. It's not like you have to come in and be the guy right away, take a bunch of carries or targets and all this. So it's relatively low risk in that regard. We know the biggest difference just happens to be with Le'Veon Bell. There's none of these moral issues going in for everything Antonio Brown has been about off the field at this point, which is a big part of this. And it's a big part of what we want to get into here, because we always talk about coach speak and the things that get said. Bruce Arians is in a spot right now where he appears from the outside in to be inconsistent if we're going to take the things that he said on face value. So, Cliff, why don't we get into it here?
What some people say ain't always what they mean.
We all have a job to do. We're going to have to count on everybody to do their job.
Consider this a translation.
I think we're working at it, and we'll see where we're at on Sunday.
Coach Speak with Chiney and Golic Jr.
Because we talked about this the other day, Chiney. Bruce Arians had said back in March of this year, Antonio Brown was not a fit for this locker room. We would not be pursuing him, and was very clear on that. He was asked after the game what changed in that process. Here's what he said.
I think he's matured, and I believe in second chances. Everybody wants to say that Tom picked him. Tom didn't have anything to do with it. This was some Jason I've been talking for a couple weeks ever since the injuries to our other guys. If Antonio does what I think he's going to do, he's going to be fine.
Chiney, you buying that?
I don't know about that, though. Just because, you know, he said Tom had nothing to do with it. But if you look at this team, Tom Brady, we just saw a classic Tom Brady game, right? Like, 9 different players caught passes from Tom Brady on Sunday. 4 different Bucks caught touchdowns. So this is a Tom Brady style. Like, we're seeing what we saw with the Patriots, a solid defense and Tom Brady spreading the love. And so I don't think you insert Antonio Brown into a situation that Tom wouldn't approve. So maybe it was a mutual decision, but essentially I just think that this is another point in which Bruce Arians is trying to show that he is the number one voice when it comes to this organization.
And I think that part of it's twofold, Chiney, because you're right. I think they're probably doesn't want the perception that Tom Brady is waltzing into this organization and now all of a sudden making personnel decisions. But there's also the other aspect in that one voice sort of thing where I doubt Bruce Arians, being the leader and the voice we see him to be, wants to send this fastball Tom's way of saying, yep, you know what, this is a Tom Brady decision, go ask him about it, where now all of a sudden your star quarterback's getting hounded by the media when you're trying to just progress through this season. So I think it is twofold in that regard, but it puts Bruce in a tough spot, because when you were, I mean, he minced very few words in March when he talked about Antonio Brown not being a fit for this team. And so now, while it looks inconsistent to the rest of us, for him operating, and you know this, how myopic that view is when you're inside the tunnel like this, they've got a very good to great team that's going to get a little bit better with this guy inserted into the mix, potentially a lot better, and he's trying to make sure, all right, I'm not putting any more undue scrutiny on any members of my team. I'll shoulder that load because the buck stops with me. Part of that certainly is leadership, and the other part, I think, just is the fact that he's in a situation now that is, whether it's directly or indirectly, driven by Tom Brady being the quarterback of that team.
Look, even if there are mixed messages, which we have heard, you know, a couple of times from the Bucks, you have to commend that accountability. Because if you're trying to take the pressure off your quarterback, and this is a guy that already does well with pressure when he's playing football, like, you're making the right decisions. The only problem I had is just saying, he has shown that he has grown. And I'm like, he's also shown countless instances where he hasn't. So I think more so spinning that and saying, hey, look, we will see where he's at. And if he's with it, he's with us. If he's not, he ain't.
That part of it is disappointing, because it's the same old rhetoric that we've heard. And Bruce Arians doesn't really seem like the kind of guy to feed us a line of bull. So there's part of you that says, trust this person at his word, because Bruce has earned that. But we've seen time and time again, especially when it comes to issues of domestic violence in the NFL, there's a lot of lip service about what a person has done or said or grown behind closed doors. Very often, there's not a lot of action that we're shown that shows this person has actually done anything meaningful to change. Coach Speak is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports. We'll get back to in a little bit, because the top picture in the NFC and AFC, I think this weekend especially, has started to really stratify. You're getting a bigger gap between the haves and the have-nots, which we expected going into this season. Coming up next, we're going to get to the haves all the way across the board, as we have our off day before Game 6 of the World Series tomorrow. How good should Clayton Kershaw backers and the Dodgers faithful feel? We'll ask June Lee next. It's Chiney and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chiney and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Are we officially done with the Clayton Kershaw slander? For good. through two postseason performances on this big-time stage? We'll find out. Chinne Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golick Jr. and Chinne Agwumakane to answer all the hard-hitting questions like that and how much pressure Dave Roberts is under right now. Because, man, I get that these decisions are made by other people, supposedly. It feels like they get directed at Dave. Our ESPN baseball writer, June Lee, joins us on the show, Pennzoil Performance Line. And June, we appreciate you coming back and hanging out with us, man. And I kind of want to start there. We hear so much in modern baseball about how these front offices are making so many of the decisions and the managers are tasked with going out there and executing what the analytics say. But it seems like Dave Roberts is taking an awful lot of heat for especially the pitching decisions made in Game 5. Were you for or against Clayton Kershaw being pulled when he was in that game and some of the decisions Dave made down the stretch?
So I totally understand why there's this kind of tension happening within baseball right now, because I think we're in the middle of this kind of massive cultural shift in kind of how teams are approaching pitching, and I think the Rays and the Dodgers are kind of at the forefront of it, really, obviously really depending on analytics. You know, we saw in the last game of the ALCS with Charlie Morton getting pulled very, very early in that game with only 66 pitches. And so, you know, we're in the middle of a time where I think we're seeing this massive cultural shift happening, and so a lot of these criticisms that are directed toward Dave Roberts, you know, there's been a lot of questioning just about his bullpen management, I think rightfully so over the course of the last couple of years, especially in the postseason. But I personally thought that was the right decision to take out Kershaw in that situation. And obviously the Dodgers are in a position right now where they're one game away from winning the World Series. And this is, you know, Dave Roberts has kind of been in a no-win situation all year where, you know, he has the most talented roster in baseball. And they're expected to win the World Series with the talent on this roster. So anything short of that is going to be a disappointment. And if he accomplishes his job, you know, it's going to be like, oh, well, you got the most talented roster in baseball. So, I mean, for Dave Roberts, he's just kind of in a position where, like, you know, he's going to get criticized for all these things, and he's probably not going to get as much credit with the World Series victory if just given the talent on this roster.
You heard it here. Right decision to pull Kershaw. One more time for the people in the back. And I'm speaking to the people in Los Angeles, okay? June Lee here with us, ESPN writer on Chinne Golick Jr. And June, you know, speaking of being in Los Angeles, it was made abundantly clear that I'm the only one here on the show in LA. But I have to speak to it. we saw this narrative sort of unfold, especially with LeBron James and Anthony Davis when it came to the Lakers winning a championship. We started talking about who's likely to be a front runner for that championship, whether it was AD or LeBron. But how about for the World Series here with the Dodgers? Who do you think is likely to be MVP, either team at this point?
Well, I think for the Rays, Randy Arozarena has obviously been just kind of the story of the postseason. For the Dodgers, it would be very, very interesting because I think Corey Seager has probably statistically had the best seasons, the best World Series so far. There was a story that Bradford Doolittle wrote for ESPN.com today that kind of looks at the win probability that Corey Seager has added. But from a narrative perspective, I mean, Clayton Kershaw is obviously a guy who has faced all of the postseason demons, and you know, the general postseason narrative that Gold Jr. mentioned at the start of the segment, like, this is all shaping up for, you know, the Dodgers win the World Series, and this has been the one thing that has escaped Kershaw and his, you know, one of the greatest pitchers of all time legacy that he's built over the course of his career. You know, we've kind of had the knock of the postseason stuff, and it's kind of like LeBron, you know, before he won that first championship in Miami, people were constantly criticizing LeBron for having never won a championship. This is the one thing for Clayton Kershaw that has escaped him, and so I think the narrative is probably on Kershaw's side, but from a statistical standpoint, it's probably Corey Seager.
Talking to June Lee with us here on Chinne Golick Jr., Mike Golick Jr., and Chinne Agwumake. And you mentioned the Kershaw legacy. Like, it's the unavoidable elephant in the room in all of this. But I'm curious. The World Series win would obviously go a long way. How much do you think in retrospect? I heard Joe Buck mention this in the broadcast, and he said it very pointedly. The Houston Astros got caught in a cheating scandal, and Clayton Kershaw was someone who was a victim of that playing out. Do you think, looking back with everything we know now, that might soften the way some people look at some of the instances where Kershaw did struggle on that stage?
Yeah, I think that's an incredibly astute point because I think the narrative rewriting, I think that's going to happen around that Houston Astros team because George Springer is going to be free agent. You know, I think there's a very decent chance this is the last time we kind of see this core group of guys together. You know, we're going to look back at that Astros team very, very differently from a legacy perspective in about 10 years. And so, you know, if Kershaw wins a World Series and, like, kind of this, like, you know, criticism, this very easy criticism that, you know, people like Stu Gatz like to throw around about Kershaw. when that kind of thing happens, and you can't really criticize him anymore, you know, it's going to be very, very different to look back at it. You know, when Kershaw eventually retires in however many years, and we look back at him as one of the greatest pitchers of this generation, it's going to be so easy to forget everything that led up to that World Series title and that potential, you know, World Series MVP that would kind of be the cherry on top of this, you know, magnificent career that he's put together, where he's just undoubtedly the best pitcher of his generation.
And since we're having these type of conversations, June, big picture here, when we're looking at the World Series in its totality, the ability for the MLB and baseball to get to the point where they're competing, what are your overall thoughts on how baseball has handled this season and the postseason with everything going on in the pandemic?
That's a really, really good question. I think, I personally didn't expect when we started games to actually make it to this point. The fact that we are one game away from giving a World Series championship trophy to someone, like, that for me would have been so crazy and absurd just a couple months ago if you had told me that this would happen. So I think that by itself, you know, obviously there's been a lot of controversy over the way MLB has gone through this, but, you know, after the first, you know, the major outbreaks with the Marlins and the Cardinals, MLB kind of kept things together. The players seemed to kind of follow protocols a lot more stricter after all of that. You know, I think you have to give credit to Major League Baseball, especially just given the way that this bubble has kind of turned out, the fact that there wasn't very many outbreaks after the two initial ones, that they seem to have learned from those two experiences. I think you have to give credit to Major League Baseball, and you know, I think the ratings for all sports have kind of been down since the pandemic, and obviously it's an election year and there's a lot of things happening, but I think this postseason has been a lot of fun, and there's been so many really great moments in every single round. And, you know, as crazy as this year has been, I'm going to look back fondly at least on this postseason run.
I think we all will, and I think the World Series has gone a long way. Game 4 might have been as exciting a postseason baseball game as you're ever going to find, so it's certainly given us some classic moments. June, we appreciate the time and the insight, brother. Always a pleasure. We will talk to you very soon.
Thanks for having me on, friends. I appreciate it.
June Lee. Stu Gatz catching strays out here, by the way. I love it. Coverage of the world. Go for it.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, I just like how he called us friends. We're family.
We are friends. June's our guy. We love having him around here, which is why
I feel like he's our son, because he's so much younger.
That is true. We are like a very young show around here, and June is still even younger in all this. What, Cliff, why are you throwing up your hands right now?
Time out. You can't just sun somebody. That is so disrespectful. You
I'm
can't
with
do
them.
That.
I'm with
you
them.
Cannot do that. No way.
Well,
I don't care how.
This is the first time Cliff and Devin are together on one thing.
I was going to say.
Can't sun somebody.
Okay, he's our little bro. What?
I don't even know. Little bro might be too much.
I think he's just our friend.
Family. Okay, we just all family.
Yeah, okay, say we are all family. This Chinee, you're so right. For Devin and Cliff to unite on anything on air on this show says so much about what we just managed to pull off.
Whoops.
There. Coverage of the World
Love
Series
you,
Game 6 begins on ESPN Radio Tuesday at 7:30 Eastern. Dan Shulman, Jessica Mendoza, and Chris Singleton, along with Buster Olney, all going to be on the call. It's officially FOP, Friends of the Program.
You got to be careful with that one.
Do I?
What's wrong with...
You
didn't even want to repeat it. That's why.
Nope. Moving on. Coming up next, are we seeing the decline of a former MVP in the NFL? Or are we watching a team that has just finally weathered too much? We'll see if we're back after this, Chinee Angola Jr.
Chinee Angola Jr., the podcast.
Issues in New England, injuries in Cleveland, the usual happening in Atlanta. Like, I don't know what else to call it at this point. We got so much to get to coming up. Odell Beckham Jr.'s ACL injury that's going to have him out for the year, and the weird relationship on the field between him and Baker Mayfield. All of that coming up. It's Chinee Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chinee Agwemeke. Plus, we got to figure out, should every offensive lineman be required to fight anytime something happens on a football field? Because I saw Andy Dalton take that shot, Chinee, in the Cowboys game. Dirty hit. Should have been flagged. Quite frankly, I think there should have been a suspension on the back end. I was shocked that that wasn't the fallout from it. But everybody is coming for these O-linemen, the backups that were in there, for not fighting on Andy Dalton's behalf.
Would you have?
I probably would have, but I am sympathetic to what this particular group of linemen is having to deal with. And we'll get to that in a little bit because I think there's actually a fair amount to unpack there that a lot of people are missing. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, because before we talk about quarterbacks in Dallas, we got to hang out in New England for a little bit, where Cam Newton posted a total QBR of 3.5 on Sunday. It was the single worst QBR by a starting Patriots quarterback since the metric began in 2006. It was a mighty struggle, and I'm curious. This is the guy that you had to start on your fantasy team because Lamar Jackson had a bye this week. And so as you watched Cam and what went down, what was your takeaway seeing the way that he struggled so mightily on Sunday?
So, yes, if you followed my Instagram stories, that was my feelings, me working through my feelings. And what did I finish with, Junior, at the end of that?
You're going to keep going. You're not going to give up. You're not a quitter.
No. After that, the next story. I don't know if you saw it.
I didn't.
Krispy Kreme donuts.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, listen, if you're going to tweet through it, you might as well eat through it. That's gospel.
100%. So, you know, for me, I just think that early in the season, there was a lot of adrenaline and a lot of momentum for Cam because he finally found a place that people treated him like home, you know, and also coming off of injury to have such key performances that helped his confidence. But I do think that over the course of the season, things are going to really be accentuated just because it's not so easy. Like, we see some really amazing achievements in throughout sports on one end, and then it's just as likely that someone could struggle due to the situation, and returning to play is not so easy, you know, especially when you're coming off of injury and you're coming off of training in a different scenario. So I have some grace for Cam, even though he was like, this was the one week that I was like absolutely forced to start him. My team was called Super Cam That Bro, and then I switched it because I can't get a win in fantasy. I have some grace for him just because I know this is hard to even say yes to stepping in and succeeding in a scenario. Then now you're following Tom Brady. Also, you're dealing with a situation with less weapons. A lot of people that, you know, people that opted out before the season, you know, this was the reality, not necessarily what we saw with the adrenaline in the play at the start.
Yeah, I think there's so much to take in with the Cam situation and the Patriots situation in general, because you know the conversation that was going to come up this weekend. Tom Brady and the Buccaneers have been balling, especially the last couple of weeks. The Patriots have struggled. And so everyone's looking at the same, well, maybe it was more Tom Brady all along, or at the very least he's winning that split right now with the way things are going with Bill and the Patriots. But look at how much has happened with the Patriots, all the opt-outs before the season, losing Cam Newton, their starting quarterback, for what ended up being a very winnable Chiefs game. Like, they have weathered all of this. And it looked like from the outside looking in, Shanae, that shoulder for Cam that we know had issues coming in, that he had to work to change his throwing motion and technique to try and accommodate for, just didn't have any gas left in the tank for a lot of that game. And so that's certainly a factor in all this. The unknown part of this is COVID-19. He did have to miss time due to COVID. He was off the field for that game, and he was asked about it. I thought this was curious after the game, because we've heard different reports from a lot of people of how the virus has affected them after the fact, and here's what Cam said on WEEI.
I mean, I'm hearing a lot of what it could be. It's simple. I have to play better. Let's just point and say that. You know, I'm a big boy. I understand what this professionalism is. It's full of opinionated, you know, views, and some of them may be true, some of them may be false, but yet at the end of the day, I'm looking at person in the mirror saying, okay, all right, let's figure this out. I've been here before, all right, unfortunately and fortunately. So, you know, through it all, I cannot sit up here and expect something from somebody else that I'm not, you know, giving myself. You know, playing smart football happens with comfort and control. And until that happens, you know, you risk having those type of performances like yesterday.
Janae, an unbelievably mature response from Cam Newton all around, who said, I didn't make a stink about this on the sideline because I saw the way I was playing. I lived through that. And so why was I going to make a scene for a coach in Bill Belichick that I think he clearly respects and clearly respects him enough for this to go forward in a way that's professional, even if the results may end up not being what Cam wants?
I love everything he said. Obviously, that was really tough, that outcome. But for him to talk about professionalism, he's showing it. To talk about opinionated views that people are saying, he's understanding that there's some truth to that. That's acknowledgement of reality. But when he said comfort and control, like, yeah, he's in a situation where it's uncomfortable in the sense that this is your first year with a new team that has a huge legacy and control. You can't control the virus. And so that took away some of his momentum. I think he's only better for it because now he's acknowledged it and he can address it.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. And I completely agree. Whatever happens, because if his shoulder keeps looking like this, I don't know if we're going to see him on the field much longer. But he's acquitted himself very well in a Patriots uniform. Coming up next, we mentioned it. When your quarterback gets hit, are you required by law to fight as an O-lineman? That's next.